The Garnet Wager is a show where two players compete in a fantasy-style competition while watching episodes of The Genius. Players accumulate points based on the actions of their chosen fantasy contestants in the game show, and these points are tracked over the course of the season. The player that wins in fantasy points for that episode wins the episode, and can assign media homework for that episode. The loser must report back on that media at the end of the episode. This competition is not just for the hosts. Rules are made available to anyone who wants to play as you listen along with us. Welcome to Season 2. Welcome to the Garnet Wager. Begin.
Friends and folks, and welcome to another episode of the Garnet Wager. I'm here with Alan Ibrahim. I'm Six Detmar.
Hi, how's it going? Welcome to our pod. Welcome to the Genius Premiere Discussion Show, where my heart is broken week to week.
You know we're number two, right? There's like a Korean like podcast about the Genius where they like got some staff, like a cast members from the Genius on and stuff.
Really?
We're number two.
That's frustrating. I still think we're the best English-speaking Genius podcast in the world.
English-speaking. There we go. English-speaking. Hey. We got it. We did it.
Nailed it. Hooray. Lucky guy.
Lucky guy.
This week on The Garnet Wager, we watched Season 2, Episode 8.
Titled Lucky Guy.
Minus action. Lucky guy minus action equals
minus
no honk
jewel. Auction.
Oh, minus action. Oh, minus auction. You're right. What minus action? I accidentally a letter in my notes. Fantastic. Minus
okay,
action.
Cool.
And then, wow. No, this is why I wrote in my notes, why not elevator action? Because I thought that was funny and appropriate, but it was not. It was minus auction.
Elevator auction.
You just go through different doors and then you just make bids.
It's like, this is a very fine 1973 elevator. It's got a support, you know, a can handle up to 3,000 pounds. The bidding will start at $500.
500?
No one's bidding on this again.
Wow.
Okay. Next elevator.
The elevator just goes down depressingly. Like, oh. What did you think about minus auction in general?
I thought it was a good episode mostly.
Oh.
I don't know. What did you think?
We are now at the point in the season where the games themselves are pretty good, but what's really interesting is that everyone is playing. Like, it feels like the stakes are completely different. When the FIFA World Cup, which just ended a couple weeks ago, was wrapping up, one of the main complaints that I heard was by the end of it, people were not playing to have a good game of soccer anymore. They were playing to win the World Cup. Like, that was like the biggest complaint about the final game was that they weren't playing soccer anymore. They were just playing this big, huge game. And I think some players this week were just kind of doing that. And that made it feel kind of uneven to me, but there was a lot to like in this episode.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I feel like I want to partially blame the rules, because I think the rules made for an entertaining game, but they didn't allow for a lot of maneuvering. Mm-hmm. I don't know, like, this is an interesting game, right? This was an interesting example of the Genius's game design, because I feel like it didn't have the same goals as a lot of games, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, a lot of main matches in The Genius, the goal of the game from a design perspective is like, okay, there are layers of strategy, there are layers of, like, tricks and tactics and things you can figure out But there's also, like, just a basic level of game you can engage with if you don't think of the other stuff or whatever. And this game doesn't feel like it had that many layers as far as, like, how far you can plan into it. You kind of had to play pretty reactive.
Mm-hmm.
But it had a separate goal, which was kind of, like, pseudo-socialism. Like, redistributing the wealth, I think, was a part of its objectives, and I think it was successful.
Hmm.
It was meant to balance the economy, because, like, when I first heard they're like, oh, and you can place bids with garnets, I was like, oh, here we go, another way for them to, you know, another gold sink, another way for them to bleed the players, so they don't have to play as much prize pool. But you're not paying the bandage man. You're paying other players. And so this is a game where the rich can gain an advantage by paying the poor.
Hmm.
And that's interesting, and that I like how that balances. It feels like almost like to me, this game was like they didn't have this game set in stone at the beginning of the season. This was one of the ones they came up with, and they saw the state the game was in, and were like, okay, this week we have to do this because the gardens are too lopsided.
Right, we need to come in and correct things. The use of garnets in this game is fascinating because. I've said it before, my biggest problem with garnet sinks is that sometimes just certain players don't have garnets and they just don't get to participate. And, you know, it kind of feels like a death knell. Like, you didn't do anything wrong. You just didn't find yourself with a lot of garnets at the time. And now you're just kind of screwed because this game was based around people being able to block with garnets. Mm-hmm. I like that this game incorporated a little bit of alliances, but not too much. And even if you didn't have that many garnets, you could gain them and use the chips that you were given to do the block maneuver. Like, it wasn't like garnets were the only way to block.
Right. Right. There was an alternative.
It's kind of weird. Like, so I don't really remember much about the beginning other than... okay, this is important to mention. Last week, I told you that off-air... I would reveal to you the secret of how to determine who leaves every week.
Mm-hmm.
It happened again. It totally happens again. So basically my theory was that you can have a vague estimate of who's going to leave this week based on who gets a like major scene where they're either made fun of or make fun of themselves in the cold open. And it's been true pretty much, I think, since Doohy and maybe even before that. Where they have a scene at the beginning where they come in and everyone's like, look at this clown, look at this yahoo. And then fast forward an hour and whoops, they're out of the game. Hong Chul comments on the fact that he doesn't have garnets and says, they gave me a garnet pouch when I came here today. I told them to put it away. I ain't got shit. I'm here to win, baby. Which is anytime somebody's like, wow, I feel really good about things in The Genius this week. That's like... rip already, early rest in peace, from what I've noticed.
So you told me that after we recorded.
Uh-huh.
And I was like, that's interesting. And this was my first time getting a chance to actually like watch and be like, how much does this apply, right?
Yep.
And I think this is a case of post hoc ergo proctor hoc. I think you're doing some like after it therefore because of it. I think like if anyone gets eliminated, I mean, like, the opening is them giving each other shit. That is basically what it is every time. And it's like, no, if you go back, like, this person was getting shit and it meant they were going home. Like, several other people got shit too. That's just how this goes. I think you're conflating cause and effect here.
It's the classic internet theory thing where it sounds good, so I'm gonna commit to it. But yeah, I'm sure, yeah, you're not wrong. Like, everyone's getting their line at the beginning. Jung Hyun also, speaking of the cold open, like straight up refers to redistributing the wealth,
mm-hmm.
which is a weird line. I didn't know that Jung Hyun was a socialist. That was my moment where I was like, wait, do I like Jung Hyun more than just as a cartoon character? I think I do. And I will say I was very impressed with him this week.
Yeah, well, we'll have to do some talking about it. But he was fairly serious this week. He was fairly here to you know, listen. He was here to play Dota, and I respect that. Wrong podcast.
Yeah.
So, yeah, this main match was, as we mentioned, it was minus auction, and they're like, bidding on blocks in order to form the, like, the closest to zero negative number that they can. And, like, how do you feel like it played? Like, do you feel like there was much of a narrative to the game? Or was it just sort of, like, things sort of shook out how they shook out?
Honestly, yeah, I don't think there was a lot of narrative. I think that the rehearsal, while fun, just kind of like led to everybody setting up their play. And then the game itself felt a little bit slow to me as they were just doing the plays. Mm-hmm. Part of that is, I mean, they're just standing in place for this whole game. There isn't a lot of like going anywhere. They don't have, I don't know how many breaks they got. I only caught one like 10 minute break.
They got two 10-minute breaks.
Okay, so, but there wasn't, like, a lot of time of, like, the really crunchy sitting in the garage talking about strategy with each other stuff and alliance building.
And what few, like, it was difficult as far as fantasy points this week because I kept trying to figure out, like, okay, was that a betrayal? Was that a don't honor a deal where people were like, hey, we should do this. And then they go out there and they're like, they just don't do it. And someone's like, hey, you didn't do that. And the other person's like, well, you didn't say yes. So I'm doing my own thing.
Right. That happened a lot with, I believe, Jiwon and someone else.
Yiwon. Yeah. Those two had some conflicts of interest, I would say.
All of that stuff was why I really sincerely thought Jiwon was going home this week. Jiwon, to me, this season has grown more and more into a Maverick player and somebody who makes a lot of choices to screw other people over. And I keep thinking that's just going to blow up in his face, and it hasn't yet. It feels like it should, though.
It feels like no, like, there was I'm trying to figure out how to phrase this. Like, early on, it was like, okay, like, the here are the leaders, here are sort of, like, the groups that automatically form, right? Like, there's the group that'll form around Jin-ho, Yunsun's gonna sort of whip up a council, Songmin usually was trying to find his way into groups and sort of, like, become the right-hand man. He never seemed to really want to be the leader of an alliance, with a few exceptions, but right. Much less so compared to season one. And then I wonder if Junghyun wanted to be a leader and no one took him seriously. That's my standing theory. But, like, the state we're at now, and have been for a little bit now, it feels like, is just no one, like, at the beginning, as everyone came in, they all gathered together and were like, okay, we're all going to team up. We're all going to take down Songmin. And they just didn't. And, I mean, the game was a hard one to do that in, kind of. But, like, also, they just didn't work together at all.
It's exactly. I think, regarding, like, the pacing of this episode, this would have had a way better arc and pace to it if they really had worked together on that. It felt like they just stopped trying to do that, honestly. Which is to say, take down Songmin. Because they're right. He does have way too many garnets. He's probably way too good at the games, and if he's not eliminated, they're all going to get picked off one by one. But they didn't really work that hard to, like, they agreed on it, and then they just kind of, their, like, collaboration collapses really quickly.
Mm-hmm. And it's, I mean, do you feel like it's a case where the collaboration fell apart because the game, like, because they were like, oh, look, this game actually, like, naturally redistributes the wealth. Never mind, we're content with this.
That's a good point. I think but it's not just the fact that he's wealthy, it's the fact that he's really, really good. Like, when he gets when they see the DM, he doesn't get sent to it, but they all look to him and they're like, oh, that's the game that got you out. That's the one thing. That way, had you been sent to the DM this week, if we somehow worked that out, you might have gone again. We might have been able to eliminate you. Like, we saw the chance. And it presented
itself.
Well,
it was impossible to send him to the DM this week. It was literally impossible because of the token.
With that invincibility token. Yeah, I guess that's a good point. Our token of immortality. But, I mean, they also just wanted to get him to use it because they were like, well, if we get him to use it, then it's one more slip up and he's out. But it just didn't work out that well. I think a, like, episode long play is more enjoyable to me than like what this episode felt like, which was no play. I don't really remember a lot of the plays, not players, this episode, if we're being honest. And I mean, just watched it.
It was kind of micro plays. Can I get away with saying that? It was
I like, think so.
There were moments where it's like, oh, you're doing something here, but it wasn't like, I feel like there's a implication with play of like sort of a concerted effort that affects the whole game. And there definitely was none of that. Mm-hmm. Right?
Yeah.
It was just sort of these little things that would happen. Yeah, I don't know. It was kind of an unsatisfying main match, frankly. And it was unsatisfying just because it's like, yeah, they didn't, they sort of had kind of a game plan and then didn't do it. Like, Yuan sets it up like, okay, I'm going to intentionally, like, he's like, I'm not worried about the death match, right? And we need to take Songmin down. So I'll just intentionally lose, bring Songmin down with me, he'll use the token, and then I'll eliminate one of you and it'll be fine. And he doesn't do that.
Exactly. It's really, it feels like an episode with a lot of potential that they set up and then the people just don't do the things that they say they're going to.
Mm-hmm.
What, there are still funny things in here. I mean, I don't mean to just frame Songmin as a villain, like because of the way Fantasy Genius works, that like I need him to lose for me to win. But I just, it feels like he's dominating now. You know what I mean? It just kind of feels like he's playing, he's kind of doing so well that he doesn't need to worry anymore.
Hmm.
And I like Songmin, the person, the player, a lot more when his back is up against the wall. His back has not been up against the wall, like, almost at all this season.
Yeah, I think you're right. And I think there's a lot of it is due to the fact that, like, I mean, because it's the, like, the problem with Yuan's plan was that Yuan had to put himself in danger in order to take down the token, right? You have to, like, it's a case where it's like, you have to risk your own life to take away someone's shield. And it's like, that just doesn't feel worth it to people, right?
Right. You take away his shield, you're out of the game, he's still in the game, he just doesn't have a shield anymore.
Right. Or maybe you're still in the game, maybe you win the DM, but it's like, you're putting your life on the line in exchange for him possibly having to put his life on the line sometime in the future.
Right.
It's like, that just doesn't feel like a worthwhile risk to people. Like, it's one of those things where everyone's like, oh, someone should do this, but when it's your time to do it, you're like, no, fuck that.
Right. And I'd almost argue that the episode kind of plays with Songmin as a heel a little bit. Like, in the beginning, I think this might have been during the, I think this was the end of the cold open. He's talking about how Jung Hyun borrowed garnets from him last week, and he says, you know, you owe me those garnets right back. And Jung Hyun's like, well, I don't have them right now, like, I'll pay you back. And they kind of jokingly play like they're like it's a mafia moment or something. And then Songmin says, even if you wring a dry squid, water comes out. And then, yeah. Like, several tight zooms on Jung Hyun laughing nervously because he realizes that Songmin has become Tom Nook. Like, it's kind of scary, but in a really funny way. Because you're like, obviously he's not going to do that. We're just being playful. But it's like, he could. He does. That's true. He does have a loan now. Jung Hyun does have a loan to Songmin.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I'm wondering if the show and maybe the players know that We have a Maverick, and we need to get him out. We need to shake things up if he's going to be eliminated.
I don't see how they would do it at this point. I mean, Like, I could see maybe a Yuan Yu Young alliance doing it in the right game.
Mm-hmm.
But they're running out of chances.
Well, do you think his play right now is to keep the token of immortality until the final game and then just be like, just kidding, I actually win the genius? Is he allowed to do that?
I don't know the rules, but at best what it says is he, like, I mean, so what it says is he can't be targeted in a DM, as I believe the rules.
Mm-hmm.
So I would assume it can't be used in the finale at all.
Right, because that's not a DM in the traditional sense.
Right, and even if it could, I would assume what would happen is you just get an auto win on one of the three DMs, assuming it uses the same structure as the season.
Oh, right, you're right. That makes a lot more sense.
But I'm guessing that won't be, you know, I'm guessing they'll take it away. They want more of an even playing field for the finale.
Yeah. So. I mean, who do you think can get there with him anymore at this point? Like, who has chance of coming at the king?
Yu Young's the only, I think Yu Young can get second.
Really?
I don't think Yuan has the, like, Yuan is very smart. He's got a very good mind for what he's looking at, and I feel like he doesn't have good peripheral vision.
Interesting. He's seeing the forest for the trees.
Right. Like, he misses stuff around the sides of his focus because he tends to be so narrow. And so when he's in a DM or something, he's incredible. But when he's in a big sprawling game, he loses the macro for the micro, which is kind of ironic for a StarCraft player.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe, you know, I guess he's probably pretty out of practice after all these years. I don't think there's any way Jiwon can do it.
No way.
I like Jung Hyun, but I mean, even that DM, like, his game plan was really straightforward and he still fucked it up. Like, his game plan, we'll talk about it, but he has a game plan of just, like, basically don't play, and then he fails to not play.
We got it. Can't wait. Yeah, if he got there, I can imagine him getting to, like, him and Yu Young, and then he somehow, like, magically takes top three. But if it comes, like, I think it's Yuan and Songmin are the two that are going to be duking it out.
Definitely, that's where I fall as well.
Because Yu Young could take him down, but like only with the help of like either an alliance or a really good DM that goes really well in her favor.
Yeah, because I mean, you know, we only have one data point as far as her DM play.
True,
which was her DM versus Dai, but she was very good.
Right.
So.
And I think she learned from last week where her play was like, just play normal. Don't do anything weird. No spicy stuff. And in this game, she was like also playing kind of conservatively. Like, she found her match that got her a very small number and just kind of stuck with it and like took joy in it. I really liked the pleasure that she got out of getting the like 19, 18, and 17 in a row. Because when 17 came up on the board, she's like, oh, yay, everyone's going to pass on this, and then I'm going to buy it. And then they all do pass on, and she does buy it, because she's not a threat. Like, she's not going to win. She's probably going to come second. And then she just ties her first. It's like, wow, great job. You did it.
Right. I mean, like, she has a good, like, it's that one of those basic under-the-radar talents, which is the way you comport yourself doesn't feel threatening, even if that's incongruous with your actions. Like, her actions are... She's been a really good player who's won a DM, won multiple main matches, is basically always in the conversation. Like, if she gets a foothold, she gets running. The only time she's been able, like, they've been able to, like, put her in a bad position is where she literally had no leverage.
Yeah.
But she plays it off as just this person who's happy to be here, and everybody just falls for it. It's very impressive. And I do think she is probably just happy to be there as well. But like,
at the end of the day.
But I think it's a very impressive job on her part.
Yeah, there's a lot of impressive stuff in this episode that's done. These are players who know what they're doing. No, again, nobody here is bad. Nobody here is like making embarrassing mistakes except in the DM. but even then it's like it's something. And even Hong Chul, like, is toning it down a lot. And seems to be a lot more like he's trying to listen more and understand how the game is played instead of just like chatting everybody's ear off.
There is a part in the main match where Hong Chul just gets so like he's like Yuan is trying to convince him to pass and there are a bunch of garnets in the pot and he's just like, I'm doing really bad right now, man. I could really use those garnets. It's just like. It feels like it's the most real Hong Chul's been since he bailed G1 out of that DM.
Yeah, it's really cool to see him take down all of the layers of comedy and just be a person. The like teased at moment of this week was Songmin yelling at him like, "Hey, I want you to do this thing," and I think a lot of the subtlety of that scene doesn't come across right. In translation, but it's very clearly like Songmin being straight talk with Hong Chul and being like, hey, bud, it's me, Song Min. How's it going? So you have a thing in front of you. I want you to do this. You don't have to. I don't care what you actually do, but I want you to know that I'd like you to make this choice. And it's like, Hong Chul is just like, well, but garnets. But what if I had garnets instead? It's like, all right, well, I'm not. Like, Songmin's method of getting people to do stuff is to just, like, implant the idea and then, like, run away. Like, pretend he didn't say anything.
And also, when he has this advantage, he can be like,
you don't have to do what I tell you to do because I'm already winning.
Right. It's like, oh, listen, you do whatever you want, but like, gosh, it sure would be nice having an ally going forward, don't you think?
True.
Out of just, he can get away with a lot of, like, I don't know how to phrase it, but just like a lot of psychological pressure that isn't even that hard. He doesn't even have to push that hard. He just sort of has to lean on you, and you're just sort of like, oh, shit. And that's, you know, I can't, like, as much as I love Songmin, I can't really give him credit for that. That's just the power you have in that sort of position. You know, that's just the leverage of having a lot of garnets, presumably about to win the main match, and also having the token of immortality. Even if Jung-hyun had all those things, he could do the same kind of plays. You know?
Mm.
Everybody would be bowing to the Emperor. Oh, sorry, I guess I can't call anyone else the Emperor when Yuan's still here, huh?
Hey!
So, this might be a shorter episode, but I think we're ready to talk about some homework, don't you?
I mean, I do. I have a lot of thoughts on the homework, and like we said, the main match was fairly straightforward, and the DM had some really fun moments, so I think it's more like the difference will just be split differently, or the time will be split differently.
I see. Okay.
So, well, for this week, my homework was to play the 2002 video game? What year did this game come out?
I don't even know.
Let's find out. 1, 2, 3. 2003.
All right.
Beautiful Joe is the game we're talking about here, folks. It was a PS2 and GameCube title from Capcom and Capcom Production Studio 4 specifically. Hideki Kamiya, known for such games as Resident Evil, Devil May Cry, which is definitely, that one definitely is shown in this game. Bayonetta. There you go.
Mm-hmm.
So he does a lot of weird stuff. He likes combat, and he likes anime, and I do too. And this game feels like a cool blending of those two things.
Mm-hmm. I mean, there's actually a lot of Sentai in this game.
For sure. Very Power Rangers-y, Super Sentai, all of that stuff. You play as Joe, who is an average Joe, obviously, and he goes to a movie with his girlfriend, whose name is Sylvia, and the movie characters come out of the film, and they jump and they grab his girlfriend, and he goes, oh no, and then jumps into the movie to save her, and is given the power to become Beautiful Joe by his mentor, who has a name that Captain Blue.
Captain Blue.
So do they ever say what's Captain Blue's like deal? Is he just like the old?
I mean,
guy.
It's Beautiful Joe lore is weird.
I mean, it's nothing.
Well, yes and no. So like, I guess some spoilers, right? So most of this takes place inside the movie, right? So, like, It's Captain Blue is, like, an ongoing... It's basically, he's, like, stepped inside, like, you know, a superhero movie, right? So Captain Blue is the superhero of the movie, and Joe's a Captain Blue fan, right?
Right, okay.
But also Captain Blue is Sylvia's dad?
Oh, wait.
Right. The wait is the... Yeah, no, what? How does that work?
Okay.
I don't know. Yeah. Don't, you know, you're not going to find answers in Beautiful Joe lore, only more questions.
Which is fine. I mean, it's not about that.
Right.
It's enough setup for, like, you jump into the game and then you're powerful and you punchy. And what I warmed myself up for was like a 2 to 3 hour long beat 'em up. That's what I always thought Beautiful Joe was. And I knew that it was like notoriously pretty difficult and had some like time mechanics. That's all I knew about it.
Okay.
What it ends up being is a much more sprawling action game with enough systems to last you and to be developed in like the average campaign of like a single player action RPG. It has the breaks of an arcade game, but it is definitely not an arcade game. This was originally for PS2 and GameCube. It wasn't like a arcade brawler that was then ported. It is straight up a game you play and then you hit save on and you pick up later. Which is cool because it means that they get to take these powers and really do a lot of fun stuff with them. That's not just like makes it more fun to punch dudes, but it does. So you're initially given the slowing down time power, which makes the camera get all like film grainy, and then you can like duck and dodge enemies. And at first, it seems like that's the mechanic of the game is like the dodging, but you kind of don't have to dodge the standard enemy ever, unless you want like big score points, is how I understood it. Because if you dodge an enemy successfully and they totally like alert you to how they're going to hit you with like a big exclamation point, like duck now. If you duck then hit them, you can like shoot them like a projectile and then they bounce off of other enemies and you do way, way, way more damage. But you can kind of just mash through most of the early game. The complexity comes from, so you have the speed up, you have a slowdown, which does the opposite thing, obviously. It slows you down, and with the slowdown, you're not just using it to fight enemies, you're using it to affect the environment. And this is where I think the game really starts to come into its own, because different things react to your powers differently, and sometimes just going forward requires you to use these powers and in clever ways, in like puzzle ways. And that was the stuff where I was like, oh shit, this game is way more than I thought. This is not just like a punchy brawler. This is like a like puzzly action game. This is awesome. I'm curious, like, what was your history with this game and like with the franchise? Because you recommended this to me.
I mean, I don't know. I think there are 4 Beautiful Joe games. There's Beautiful Joe. There's Beautiful Joe 2. There's Beautiful Joe Double Trouble on the DS. And there's a Beautiful Joe Red Hot Rumble for GameCube and PSP, I think, which is like Smash Bros. Kind of.
Hell yeah.
I own all of them except for Red Hot Rumble. I own all the single player ones. And I guess my history with them is like I had a friend who had a GameCube, and I didn't have any consoles at the time. And I was really into video games, and I was like, I'll own a GameCube one of these days, so I'm gonna buy games, and you can borrow them until I get a GameCube, because you have terrible taste.
Wow. They
super had terrible taste.
Oh, okay, fair enough.
They were playing a bunch of, like, you know, like, the Bad Bond games and, like, Naruto.
Oh, hell yeah.
And I was like, here's Resident Evil 4, here's Super Smash Bros., and here's Beautiful Joe. I did a good job.
It's so the other thing with Beautiful Joe is like, and with the GameCube era in general, is it comes from this period of games that they don't make this stuff anymore. It's so detailed and weirdly kind of complex, but in like a beautifully simple way. Like, the act of playing Beautiful Joe is just you kind of hold right and you do jumps and punchies, and then he goes henshin a go-go, and then occasionally you have to slow down time to make a propeller go really fast or really slow. But there's so much care and, like, precision to it that it feels like a game you could spend, like, 20 or 30 hours in if you cared. Not, like, to collect things, but just to really bend its combat to your will. Like, it feels like there's a ton of potential in that combat.
There super is, and I think, like, I mean, you probably didn't even get into a lot of it, right? Like, first off, there's another power you didn't get.
Oh, I did get the third one, I just didn't mention it yet, the zoom. Oh.
Okay, yeah.
I got to the first boss where you use the zoom, and then I had to stop.
So, like, the way like, the mechanics work is it's really fun because it's, like, it plays fast and loose with physics in sort of, like, a Hollywood-y way that makes, like, it uses Hollywood logic, right? That's how the powers work, is they're based on, like, movie magic, right?
Right.
So, like, the slow-mo doesn't just slow things down. It makes you able to do things you shouldn't be able to do because, you know, like, obviously in slow-mo, you can do incredible things, right? Like, oh,
dodge
of course,
bullets.
In slow... Right, or, like, punch bullets back at people. Or, like, your normal hits just do more damage in slow-mo because it's slow-mo, so obviously it's a harder hit.
Right.
And
if you,
like,
punch fast, that makes fire, but not just, like, quote-unquote fire. Like, literally fire that you can use to light torches,
mm-hmm.
which is
yeah.
fascinating.
Yeah, and there are multiple puzzles in the game where it's like, oh, I need to light a torch. I'm just going to punch this brick.
Right.
fast forward. And get, you know, flames around me and then run over to the torch. But, like, there's a lot of depth in, like, so one of the things is you can dodge, you don't have to go into slow-mo to dodge things.
Right, you can just hit up or down to dodge things.
Right, but there is, like, if you are in slow-mo, I don't remember if it's an upgrade or by default. I think it's by default. If you are in slow-mo and an attack comes at you, you will automatically dodge it but burn some of your meter.
Oh...
And then there's a special attack, this one I know you can buy, there's a special attack where you just, like, sort of, like, do, like, a stylish, like, Sentai pose that, like, does, like, a big AoE, like, explosion that you can only do out of the dodge that costs meter.
Oh.
And so, like, there's a reward, like, there's a special move you can only do when you do a bad dodge, basically. It's, like, it's really interesting, some of the stuff they do with the mechanics, and also the mechanics combine, where it's like, okay, if you go into slow-mo, like, obviously you're gonna hit harder, but you're also moving really slowly. If you go into slow-mo and then hold fast-forward at the same time, you're gonna move a little bit faster, but still get all the benefits of slow-mo.
Of slow-mo, yeah, I learned that one partway through. And then if you do those two and zoom... You can do, like, the upward jump rocket thing and then reset everything and rocket downward and just, like, eliminate everything around you with, like, a million damage and it just blows everything up.
But it burns your meter like crazy.
Yeah, right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I really like the mechanics of it. I think it's just a really well-tuned, like, the studio that made this went on to become known as Clover. Made Okami, made God Hand, made some pretty amazing games. And I don't know, I just, it's a really satisfying brawler with fun ideas and a, like, an enjoyable aesthetic, and it's just a good time, and as you say, it's sort of this mid-tier of game that just doesn't get made anymore.
Right. It's in the same, like, generation and same classification of game as, like, Chibi-Robo, or, even Kirby Air Ride, which, although it is a Kirby game and although it is a racing game, is, like, so specifically its own thing that you probably won't see a game like that anymore. Or Billy Hatcher and the Giant Egg, just, like, complete nonsense fever dream games that existed because somebody had a cool idea and decided to make it.
And because budgets were at a point where it's like there was this, you could have an idea that was kind of weird, but it wasn't that expensive for you to make a big deal out of it.
Right.
Whereas these days, that level of game just kind of, like, we're starting to get it back a little bit, but for the most part, it just doesn't exist. If you have a weird niche idea, it either has to be a tiny indie game or it doesn't get made. You can't do, like, this, like, oh, I have this idea and it needs some budget, but, like, it also can't be your summer blockbuster. It's like, well, okay, then fucking go away.
Right. Well, yeah, this game has the, like, graphical fidelity and, like, combat complexity of a AAA game, but still feels like someone could just make this. It doesn't, like, seem like it took $1 billion. It's this weird, like, middle tier that you just don't see anymore, and you can't because, like you said, budgets have become so segmented. Your game is either, like, with two people made it in a garage or Ubisoft right now, it feels like.
Mm-hmm.
I really want to see more games like this. I really missed... It was really nice going back to this and going, like, yeah, this was, like, a whole thing. And they got to make 4 of these. That's so bananas. They got this whole universe with this wacky, dumb guy that just puts on a suit and punches people real fast and slowly. Got to be its own thing for a couple of years. And then it was gone. And, you know, Kamiya has continued to, and Clover Studios have made some amazing things since then, even in the same style. But there's something really like unique and special about Beautiful Joe that I was like very glad to get to play.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I'm gonna toss you 4 stars for this.
Oh hey.
Because cool. Although like I had not played it, I do remember like loving the Toonami review of this game, because Toonami used to straight up review video games, which I thought was cool. During the commercials, they would be like, "Hey, you know what's a good game? Mario Sunshine." And then Tom from Toonami,
they were wrong. Like, they were liars.
They were lying. No, Mario Sunshine's amazing. Come on now.
No, it's not though.
I feel like it's one of the best Mario game. But anyways, he would review Beautiful Joe, and I always got so excited, and I was like, I don't even know what this is. Like, what genre is this? And they made other ones, and there was an anime that I saw some of, and it just seemed really weird. Now getting to play it, I'm like, oh, this was like very cool in its own right.
Hmm.
I was trolling you. I've never played Mario Sunshine.
That's bad. Anyway, and you know, there are games where I am invested in my opinion. Mario Sunshine is not really.
Don't
one of
I
them.
Know it?
Listen. Sometimes you have bad taste. It's okay.
Wow.
I you forget
can't...
you.
All right.
So our deathmatch this
hey.
Week. Same picture hunt. You gotta hunt the same
Songmin's,
picture.
Songmin's worst enemy.
So. I feel like, so you characterized this where you were like, oh, this is like the death match that like took Songmi down. Everyone's like, oh, this was our one chance to get him, right? Yeah. I feel like I haven't seen anything that makes me think Songmin's better at DMs, because he hasn't been to one yet.
That's, yeah, I think he would totally, if he got sent to one, would do terribly.
Yeah, so I don't think there's anything, like, I think it is special in that it's what eliminated him before. But it's not like his silver bullet. It's just a bullet, and bullets kill people.
That's a good point. So, if people don't remember, Same Picture Hunt is kind of a game of memory, but also kind of a strategic memory, where you're on a like conveyor belt. You're represented by a little portrait, and every time you attempt to guess what your next piece is to go forward on the conveyor belt, if you're right, you go forward and go again. If you're wrong, you go backwards one. And if you fall off, you lose. That's it. Or if somebody gets to the front, they win. Jung-hyun very quickly realizes that with both of them in the middle, but with Hong-chul 2 steps back, he never has to go anywhere. As long as Hong-chul never gets it right. So his play is to just pick exactly what Hong-chul plays. And he totally uses the character of Jung-hyun to his advantage here. And I thought it was really clever and good. Because he picks, like, Hong-chul goes first. He lets Hong-chul go first. And Hong-chul picks something. And then he goes, yeah, I mean, let me pick that again. I forget what it was. And everybody laughs like, wait, seriously? Classic Jung-hyun. Classic foolish old man. Bad memory. And then you quickly realize, like, nope, he is doing that because every time he reveals a new card, that is helping Hong-chul out. And as long as they're both not getting any help, then he's just going to win by default.
Right. There's that moment where he's like, you know, it's his second turn. He's like, you know, I still feel like I don't remember what S was. And everyone's like, oh, I see what's happening.
Oh, this is a play. I hope this is a play. Or else we're
going to die. Either
that
or we should call an ambulance.
Right.
He's having a stroke.
Somebody help this man. And Hong-chul plays it very respectfully. I was disappointed with the choosing scene, like choosing who's going to the DM, because they totally pulled a fast one on us and like make it seem like it's definitely Ji-won going to the DM. Of course it is. Here are all the moments in which Ji-won screwed over Jung-hyun in the whole season. Like, we know who it's gonna be, right? Come on, guys. And then he's like, meh, Ji-won, take a seat. Hong-chul, you seem fun. Let's play a game together. And it's like, does nobody realize in this game that picking someone for the DM means you want to win? You're supposed to win the DM? Hong-chul's been in DMs before. Ji-won's been in plenty of DMs before.
He's been in one where he won. I mean, like, he might have won on his own skill if that were an option, but it wasn't. He won the DM he was in because everyone decided he should win.
Right. They made that decision together.
Like, if anything, if I was there, I'd be like, okay, Hong-chul, you got handed a win. Let's see you earn one.
Right. let's see you play the dang game for once.
Mm-hmm. And also, I mean, like, I don't know. So with your protest about G1, I think it's a couple of things. I think one, I think Jung Hyun was strongly considering picking him, and then it was like, well, you have been three times, and you are also pleading for your life, and I'm not like, I'm not the most cold-blooded person here. I guess I'll let you go. And then the other thing is, I mean, like, the editing made it look like it was gonna be G1, which is like, I mean, yeah, it's editing. Editing's job is to create suspense and dramatic tension. They right. did the thing that editing does.
Yeah, I'm you know? I mean, I just feel bad because I fell for it. I think it's fine that the show did the editing, did that. That's they're supposed to do that. But I was like, man, I fell for it. I'm a sap.
I see. Well, that's fair enough, I guess. Anyway, as far as the deathmatch itself, I feel like it's frustrating because Jung Hyun's game plan, like, okay, Jung Hyun's game plan was fine of like, okay, I'm not gonna play and therefore you'll lose. Like, that's kind of lame, but I guess it's fair enough. But he doesn't even actually do it. He actually gets nervous and like gives Hong Chul a couple and still wins. Which is like, you know, that's just the math. That's how the math works out. And Hong Chul does accidentally pick the same one twice. But it's like, it just felt unsatisfying to me, where it's like, okay, this felt like Hong Chul had the odds against him, and then Jung Hyun's like, and I will, you know, I'll do the finishing blow with this plan. Oh, I fucked it up.
Oh, whoops.
Oh, well, he lost anyway. Like, that's, it's unsatisfying, you know?
Here's my take. Season 2 of The Genius has had no good DMs. No great DMs. And it's less like cynical. I don't consider myself to be cynical much. I'm somebody with a lot of optimism, and I know they can do better. I know these players are good and they have the potential to do cool shit with each other. Why are all of these DMs vaguely unsatisfying? What is it about them that's making them like just kind of come and go? And you're like, well, I guess that happened.
Okay. In some cases, it's just bad luck, right? Like, I think the rules of the death match between G1 and Jinho should have been incredible.
For sure.
That was a great game. And both of them just sort of conspired, and it's luck and also the two players acted it out in a way that it actually wasn't interesting. But I don't know. Have there really been none?
Nothing off the top of my head, and that's kind of what matters when you're like watching the show afterwards.
I mean, what about Dai versus Yu Young? That was a good one.
Yeah.
It was really close.
Yo Hop's good, that's true, and that was a pretty good one. Okay, I'll give you that. I guess there wasn't none.
Mm-hmm.
But it just, in general, like, we've definitely more than once been like, oh, that was something, I guess. That just kind of ended. And I think it's partly because we're still invested in the characters a lot, and we want to see them do big plays. And sometimes the DM just works out in a way where you don't get to do a big play. It just kind of ends.
Yeah, that's true.
And that's fine. It just means I often get out of the DM with not a lot of thoughts on it because, like, what would I even think? What is my take on Hong Chul versus Jung Hyun? Jung Hyun's plan kind of worked, even though he didn't follow it to the T. It still worked. Great job. I'm actually bummed that Hong Chul left. You would think, based on my character in this podcast, that I would be, like, gutted. But, like, he wasn't going to win. People have to leave eventually. That's unfortunate. But, you know, I'm willing to move
on. That old role is a calling.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, no, that's fair. I can't really disagree with anything you really said.
Yes, gotcha. Haha.
It does put us in an interesting point, however, for our game of Fantasy Genius, because we are now down to 5 players, which means we can no longer support 2 teams of 3.
That's true.
Before we pick our winners, before we each pick our horse in this grand race, in this scamming horse race,
in this confined scamming horse race.
Diet cherry vanilla Dr. Scamming Horse Race.
Dr. Scamming Horse Race. I love his newest album. Let's talk about fantasy points.
Hey, give me them.
So this week, you had a player go home, and that hurt you.
Wah.
So you only got 31 points.
Wow. Okay.
I, on the other hand, had Song Min, the greatest of all time, and then two players who got by without really causing any trouble. So I had -9. Wait, what? I did really bad this week.
Yeah. Well, Jiwon swore, first of all.
He did. That's
so that
true.
Was points. What were your minuses?
I mean, Songmin lost a bunch of garnets.
Oh, true.
And also just nobody earned anything. Like, Jiwon had a big fat zero. The rules of this main match were not conducive to our rules for Fantasy Genius. And it's another one of those examples where it's like, I'm going to have to do some thinking
for next season.
About... Yeah, and I don't know if we'll do Fantasy Genius again. I probably will do it in some form, because this is fun. But, like, you know, Season 3 gimmick is not set in stone. It is kind of weird that we're hosting a show called The Garnet Wager, and there are no garnets. Maybe we should do something about that.
I had that exact realization today.
You had it today?
Yeah, where I was like, wait, garnet. Because they kept saying, like, I'll give a garnet. I'll give a garnet. I was like, wait, garnets. That's our show. When's the last time I got a garnet? What the fuck? Mods.
I had it at the end of episode 1. Aww. I was like, oh, wait a minute.
I made an oopsie.
Oh, and it wasn't all anime. Yeah. So we're going to rethink some things for season 3. Obviously, I hope we will change things between every season. That's the goal. That's the plan. But yeah, it's kind of a bummer that nobody got big points this episode, except for, you know, Hong Chul did okay, despite going home okay. And Jung Hyun did pretty well. But it feels like we didn't, like, the system wasn't built in a way that rewarded people's performance. At least to me. So.
Alas. And so it goes on. Maybe, in my opinion, this season has gotten less interesting over time. Maybe. I think it's had some highs for sure, but as the cast gets smaller and everybody's just kind of in the same room, there's been less of the, like, comedy. I'm sorry, but I am a sucker for the comedy on The Genius. I like it when people throw notes back and forth between doors. I like it when people are on their knees begging as a joke. I love that stuff. I also like it when big plays happen. Big plays, baby, love Dota. But I just feel like there's been a lack of both of those things, and it makes me sad.
Yeah, I don't think I agree with you, but I do think the latest couple of episodes have been... Yeah, I don't know. I mean, like, we called episode 6 the best episode of The Genius ever.
Right, but that's like, so outside of what the rest of the season is.
How so?
It's kind of the best because some cool shit happens that doesn't... That, like, relates to the external stuff in the game and not, like, it's not the main match. It's not just like a game played in a normal way.
But it's the culmination of the, like, the rules of the season, right? Like,
yeah,
that episode is, like, happened because all the the token of immortality and the clues that we've been getting every episode and all that came to a head.
Yeah.
And also the tension between the cast came to a head. This show isn't built to do, like, a mid-season finale, but that was a mid-season finale.
True. It was a first arc ending. I don't know. I think maybe I just need to, I'm going to need to, like, sit on this season after we're done and think about it some more. Mm-hmm. In the grand context of, like, how I felt about one, you know?
Sure. That's fair. I think I like... A lot of parts. I should wait until we're done with the season to make a real judgment. But I do think I like the cast better this season.
Oh yeah.
And I might like the arc of season 1 better.
That's fair. Yeah. That makes a lot more sense. Sorry.
Then again, fucking Sungyu did turn out to be like a capitalist traitor. So
meowth. That's right.
hard to stay in love with that. All right. Well, I guess it's time for the plug zone. Alan, plug your things.
Can I give you homework?
Oh, right. Sure, we can do that.
If we want. For your homework this week, I am going to have you do a little bit of reading.
Okay.
This week you're going to read The Evaluators. To trade with aliens, you must adapt. This is a short story by N.K. Jemisin that came out in late 2016. It's available on Wired. Everyone at home can also read it. It's extremely good, and I'm not going to say anything about it other than it's kind of, sort of, science fiction.
Is it like an Animorph spinoff?
Kind of. Basically, yeah.
All right. Well, my homework is assigned. Alan, would you like to take it to the plug zone?
You're not going to do like a corny segue where you're like, Alan, would you like to take it home and there's some plugs at home and plug your stuff or something like that?
I mean, I don't really like this segue. I mean, like, as far as like motorized transportation, I walk places. Sometimes I'll take a bike. And if not, I'm doing a car. And in between really just doesn't work for me and my lifestyle.
If you'd like to listen to me on two other podcasts, you can do so by heading over to chatspod.simulcast.fm, where I am co-hosting Chats, a television podcast with my friend Magellan, where we're talking about Pushing Daisies every week. And if you want to listen to me on a monthly basis, you can check out Fireside Friends over at firesidefriends.net, part of the Abnormal Mapping Podcast Network. That's a show where my friends Ryan, Katie, and I talk about stuff, pop culture, life, books. We actually talked about The Evaluators back right around the time it came out, so you can go check that episode out.
All right, yeah, good cross promotion there.
Mm-hmm. What about you?
I'm SixDetmar. You can find me on Twitter at SixDetmar, SixDetmar. And all the shows and stuff you can find with a little bumper at the end. I'm with Scanline Media. That's me and my friend Jen and other people who join us sometimes, like Alan.
Hi.
And we got a Patreon at patreon.com/ScanlineMedia. All right. Until next week. Peace out.
Stay genius.
You're listening to a Scanline Media Network podcast. Check out our other podcasts like Bottle Crow Reborn.
So here's the thing, Nick.
Nobody cares.
No.
It's not about that.
You actually convinced me.
Shit.
The Garnet Wager. And immediately we get Yunji being like, so hang on. Why does everyone call Jin-Ho Kong? And Jin-Ho, like, really circuitously explains because they're making fun of me.
Like, it means bean, but it's all, like, small person, and, like, I'm...
Neutral game.
So if you're averse to frame data, you can still play the game, and it'll just sometimes take longer to figure some stuff out.
Oops, all anime gaiden. I've known some podcasters with taste, and they're all cowards. Let's talk about today's menu.
Oh my God.
For the Emiya family. Operation Serial.
Episode 4 was a bit more understandable, but also, I continue to sour on these kids. I think they're dicks.
Okay, that's fair.
And our patron-only podcast, Oops All Anime.
And he has the blessed privilege of getting an invite. He shreds it in front of her, looks her in the eye, like touches
wipes
her face.
Wipes a tear off of her eye.
Wipes a tear off her eye and goes, I'll kill you.
Visit Scanline Media at scanlinemedia.com and our Patreon at patreon.com/scanlinemedia.